Well met, friends.
I'm Jude Vase.
And I'm Steph Midlock.
Welcome to Aphrabet, a podcast exploring the cobwebbier corners of Tolkien's Legendarium.
This is our very first episode, everybody. I'm so excited.
Me too. We've been planning on doing this for a long time, and we're finally getting together and doing it, and I'm really looking forward to what we put together.
Me too.
This week, on our first episode, we're talking about On Fairy Stories, which I think is the perfect place to start, as I consider it to be Tolkien's mission statement about why fantasy is important and meaningful, and kind of a personal mission statement for him about what his own legendarium meant to him and why he thought it was important to be doing.
Well, we've got many paths to tread, so let's begin.
This is the first episode. So Aphrabeth is intended to be a podcast to talk about the weird corners of Tolkien's Legendarium. We're going to dig into the lesser trod portions of his writings and dig up some of the fun, weird bits that don't always get covered in the more commonly read corners, like The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and stuff like that. We will certainly hit those big pieces, but there's a lot of weird stuff out there. Tolkien wrote most of his life in Middle-earth, and he wrote a lot of weird stuff there and a lot of fun stuff. And that's the stuff we want to dig into.
Dig into the normal stuff? That's boring. We only want the weird stuff.
Yeah, we want the weird elf shit. So
the kind of creepy stuff that you don't bring up at Thanksgiving.
There you go. Yeah. So that's kind of the mission statement. Aphrabeth, the word means discussion. It's a Sindarin word, and it's named after. It's also the title of my favorite essay of his, Aphrabeth Finrod A. Andreth, which we'll get to someday, but no time in the near future. But we'll get there. But it means discussion, and I think it really is also the mission statement that we have. I want this to be a discussion podcast where we talk about these pieces and we kind of chop it up a little bit and get into how people feel about them and why I think they're interesting. As a background, I am a longtime Tolkien fan, and I've gone a bit off the deep end with the Tolkien academia a little bit. I am by no means an expert or an actual academic. There are lots of people who are, and I admire those people quite a bit, but I would say I'm an enthusiastic amateur in the world of Tolkien academia. So I'll certainly make mistakes, and I will attempt to correct myself when I notice.
We're going to have a corrections corner. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Steph, you have a different perspective on Tolkien stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And let me just start by saying that while Jude is being quite humble, he's actually, in my eyes, an expert on this stuff, for sure. He's played it safe because it's the first episode, but Jude has really, like, over the past almost 10 years or so, really dedicated himself to the study of this and taken classes and done so much extra reading. And so you could not be in better hands. Now, when it comes to me, boy, you could be in better hands, guys. Okay. I'm here to just shepherd those of you along who, you know, maybe you have seen the movies. Okay. Not the Hobbit movies. We don't talk about those, but you've seen The Lord of the Rings and you're feeling good about it. So, I mean, my background is I've seen the movies, of course. I've read the books since I was a kid. But we're talking, just think of me as your mainstream homie, okay? Anything that's sort of like everybody's read XYZ, that's what I kind of know. So I'm going to be going along this journey kind of with you guys as we plumb the depths of Jude's beautiful, weirdo, creepy mind. It's going to be good.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good mix of points of view.
That's him being very nice. But guys, I'm really glad to be here, and I'm so excited to learn more about this and to say inappropriate things on this podcast that we shouldn't repeat. So let's just keep everything between us, right?
Yeah, we'll have to see where we end up on the child safe rating.
I know, because I kind of want to, I may drop F-bombs. I'm not going to lie. Is that okay? Well, we'll talk about this offline, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see if we end up editing or censoring, or if we just say fuck it. And
he just did it. Guys, we've been recording for like 4 minutes. Jeez.
That's the second time. I'm the worst offender. Yeah.
He is the worst of fucking offender.
All right. So tonight we're going to be talking about what I consider to be the mission statement, Tolkien's mission statement in his project, an essay called On Fairy Stories. This is a piece that is not nearly widely enough known in outside of academic circles, given how important it was to Tolkien. And I think that it's super, super fun and interesting, even if you're not a big old Tolkien nerd in an academic sense, even if you're not interested in it in the sense of like, what was Tolkien thinking? Even if you're not trying to climb inside his skull and get a sense of what he was thinking about when he was writing The Lord of the Rings, it's still a really fun essay to read just for what it is. But if you are interested in what Tolkien thought about why he was writing and why fantasy was important and interesting, it's maybe the single most important thing and most interesting thing he wrote on that subject.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited to start talking about it.
Yeah, it's the bedrock of, it's his justification for why should you care about this stuff? Why is it important? Why is it valid in a larger literary sense? So absolutely, it's the perfect place to start.
Yeah, I think it's a fun starting place. So let's all dive in. I want to give a little context for it first.
Oh God, thank God. Oh, I want some context. I need it.
So On Fairy Stories started as a lecture that he gave in March of 1939 at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland.
Oh, so fancy. That's like where Prince Will went, right? Okay.
To give you a sense of the timing there, The Hobbit was published in 37, and Tolkien was already deep into the writing of, not deep, but he was into the writing of The Lord of the Rings at that point. So he was already kind of getting into the Lord of the Rings project, but he was also, this was many decades into his own legendarium. So as we're going through this stuff and we read it, we go over the points he's making about fairy and about mythology. It's important to bear in mind that he already had very firmly held beliefs about his own legendarium, and he had his own stories in the back of his mind as he was making these points. He doesn't name drop any of his own stuff, but it's there in the back of his head, I think, in a lot of places.
Do you feel like they're this is just a little bit self-serving then?
I do. I really do.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's the thing. He's basically being like, I'm legitimizing my own shit.
I do. And we'll get down to it in a little bit here. But I think Tolkien had two goals here with this lecture. And one was to answer the point of the lecture, which was to talk about fairy stories. And the other was to make a larger point about fairy in general and fantasy. And I think the second point spoke very specifically to his own personal interest in why fantasy was worth doing, and that was obviously relevant to his own life, given that he had dedicated so much of his life already to the his own legendarium. So
that second goal is basically, in a very stripped down way, saying fantasy is worth doing, period. Here is why.
That's what he's
saying. He's basically saying that their fairy tales are legit. They're a literary genre. They're not just for kids. Fuck you guys. You're going to love them. Sit back, all you guys at St. Andrews, and just enjoy this shit.
Yeah, he had a very specific belief about what the function of fantasy was. And we'll get into that.
Sure.
So the essay is, he eventually revised the, I keep saying essay, it's the lecture was later revised into an essay and expanded. So that's why I keep calling it an essay.
So Jude, what you're saying is people can, you know, read this now if they wanted to.
Yes.
Can I just preface this by saying I have not read it, but I have read the Wikipedia page. So fuck you guys.
Yeah, I have. I will put links to it's. I think I don't know what the domain status of this thing actually is, because the second hit when you search for On Fairy Stories is the full text of this essay.
Oh, shoot. So what you're saying is it's quite accessible. And even though it's accessible, I still haven't read it. Whatever. OK, cool.
But I will put some links to relevant sources in the show notes. And I will also include a link to a really good essay about On Fairy Stories by Verilyn Flieger, who you're going to hear a lot about.
Who's Verilyn? Who is Verilyn? First of all, Verilyn Flieger is the best name ever. Flieger is a Scandinavian name. So who the heck is Verilyn? Tell us.
Verilyn Flieger is one of the most respected and most published Tolkien scholars on the planet. She's written, God, I don't even know, like a bunch of books about Tolkien. She published a volume about On Fairy Stories, and she wrote an introduction that is really, really good and really, really interesting and informative. She's taught some classes at Mythgard. I was lucky enough to take a class on Tolkien's world building in Middle-earth at Mythgard from her, which was super cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, hey, it was fantastic.
Can you tell our listeners what Mythgard is?
Yeah, let's do that. Mythgard is an online school, like a college, that was started by the Tolkien professor, Corey Olson, who started doing podcasts himself and now does a whole bunch of cool stuff. They offer courses in all kinds of interesting genre adjacent stuff. You could take classes about Harry Potter and science fiction and kinds of stuff. But Tolkien studies is one of their main subjects that they offer a degree in. You can get a master's in Tolkien studies, which is what I've been driving towards slowly.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Yeah. And they have drawn a number of extremely prestigious names in the field of Tolkien studies to their faculty. Wow. They've had Tom Shippey, who's written a biography of Tolkien, and Verilyn Flieger, and they had just a bunch of really impressive names come on the podcast or on come into the classes and teach classes. So
that's great.
If you're interested in getting more aggressively involved in learning about Tolkien stuff and in the academic side, I highly recommend you look them up. I'll put links to that in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you.
Anyway,
back to the point.
Yeah. So let's dig into this thing here.
Great. I'm ready. I've got my spade and a glass of wine and I'm ready.
So the essay breaks down into really three points. What are fairy stories? Where do they come from? And what's the point of them? And sure. The first two points aren't, the first point is not particularly interesting. I mean, it's interesting in so much as there's a really, the first point's interesting only in so much as it's Tolkien uses it to sort of home in on where he wants to go. And then when he's talking about their origins, Tolkien really gets to show off a little bit.
Hold on. Don't skip the fairy story. Don't skip like where, what are they? Because I think like the important thing from the Wikipedia page, everybody, is that the fact Tolkien and his buddy C.S. Lewis were doing something really interesting in that they were telling stories from a different place. So as opposed to like Mary Shelley, H.P. Lovecraft, all these guys that were telling stories that were like fantastical stories, but still set here in a really familiar land. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, Tolkien was basically saying like, no, fairy stories are set in the world of fairy. So that is the first benchmark of a fairy story. And if you're not, all of these like traveler's tales and beast tales and things that people like Andrew Lang were saying are important on our fairy stories, he was like, nope, that's not a thing. That's not a real fairy story. So, and that is so important to him, right? Because that's the whole point, is that we're going, he's transporting you to another world.
Yeah, that was his specific definition of fairy. Fairy stories had kind of become a really broad term at that point in time. And he spent that first section just like taking a hatchet to the the broad term of fairy story and saying, it's not this, it's not that.
Yeah.
And his specific definition was, fairy stories are stories about fairy, capital F.
Right. The land of fairy.
The realm or state in which fairies have their being is the quote.
So outside of our natural world.
Sometimes fairy often overlaps our world in some kind of fun, interesting ways, but it's definitely separate from our world. Once he's established that, then he starts talking about what's the origin of fairy stories. And this is where he gets kind of on his hobby horse a little bit.
Oh, he never does that. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
He's gracious. Mm-mm.
He again goes about kind of cutting around some of the existing stuff. There's a lot of sort of inside baseball that he does that we don't need to dig into. He spend some time whacking at the current theories that were popular at the time.
Right. Well, so, I mean, I feel like those theories are kind of interesting to talk about a little bit, yeah. Right? I mean, so when I was doing a little bit of homework for this episode, I was reading about Max Müller and what he was thinking of. And that dude, I mean, listen, I don't know anything about him, but he really was kind of down on fairy tales. He was like, they're a disease of language. He was saying that like over time, language devolves. And so what started as like a very heroic, awesome tale is reduced over time to like a fucking nursery tale for babies, you know? And he was like, myths are just stupid ancient metaphors that are stupid, and they're stupid for stupid people, right? He seemed like he wasn't into them, considering that was like his thing.
Yeah, they had. It's interesting that there was Müller with the solar mythology.
Yes, theory. His cosmic stuff, right? Yes.
Yeah, and then you had Lang's anthropological theory, which was like basically the opposite end, that these were hero tales that kind of came up from the other direction.
Yeah, they were like the survival of old customs. Mm-hmm. These were what is left of ancient cultures, but they were very much set in this world again.
Yeah. Tolkien had a different theory, and he didn't like either of those theories.
he was literally sitting in the Andrew Lang fucking, lecture.
It's not just... He showed up to the Andrew. This is the he showed up for the Andrew Lang lecture on fairy stories.
I was like, fuck Andrew Lang.
Andrew Lang. Yeah, I really like that.
Holy shit. He was like, oh, I could just see the ghost of Andrew. Was Andrew Lang even dead at that time? Who knows? He was like, even the notion. How dare you? So yeah. I feel like they would have a wizard's duel or something about that. I mean, that is so funny. Like the audacity of showing up and being like, actually, you guys are stupid. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's Tolkien, though. He didn't give a shit.
Yeah, it's very early 20th century academic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, white glove, stupid. Yeah, yeah. Like veiled insults over a monocle. Like, yeah, fuck that guy. It's great.
But his theory is extremely Tolkien. I like it because he's Tolkien and because language is so fundamental to how he thinks about the world. His theory is that these stories are a product of imagination and language. He has a whole section where he's talking about, I'm paraphrasing, but like if I can think about the idea of green grass, and if I can see the sky being blue, why can't I transpose the idea of green onto the blue sky and imagine a green sky?
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, I've imagined a place where the sky is green.
Yep. Immediately, you're out of this known comfort of our own world. Immediately. Yeah.
So he starts talking about how the idea that language and imagination can create something different. And this is where you get a really important, like, maybe I think the most important part of the essay is right here. One of the two most important parts of the essay. And I think one of the most important parts. And that is, he says, we make because we are made and made in the image and likeness of a maker.
Okay.
This is where we find the first mentions of subcreation. This is a term he uses to talk about the idea of writing fantasy as subcreation.
Sub to what? To a creator creating us?
Yeah, the idea that creating in the likeness of a creator.
Let's break that down. Can we talk about that a little bit?
So the primary creation, the primary world is God's, and hence subcreation is the creation of a fictive or secondary world. I'm paraphrasing Verilyn Flieger's notes here. I'm looking at it right now.
Sure.
Because this section is really important. I want to be accurate here. This is such a fundamental concept for Tolkien.
Sure.
Because one thing that I think the point I'm trying to make is that Tolkien was a Catholic, and he wasn't overt about it. He never beat people over the head with it.
No.
Mm-mm. But he was a very devout man. And I think for Tolkien, this was him aligning his passions with his faith.
And that would have been very important to him then, you think?
Yeah. Yes? And I think this was him saying, there's a place in my spiritual life for the things that I'm passionate about. And that's that man was created by a maker, and I was given these talents, and this is how I'm using them. And that's what I'm supposed to be doing with them.
And did he feel like through this study, this kind of stuff will bring you closer to your maker or help you understand where we come from more?
He doesn't get into that. In this section, he doesn't touch on any religious stuff. He's just saying that we're made in the likeness of a maker.
Sure.
He doesn't say what the purpose is.
No.
But I think my interpretation of this is that he's aligning this with his own sort of spirituality.
Absolutely.
So that's an important section, I think. And I think especially given that he spent literally his entire life doing this, I think it's an important one at some point, not in the near future, but one of these days we're going to cover a really fun little piece called Leaf by Niggle, which is a story, a little novella he wrote about a man who spends his entire life drawing a painting of a tree until he dies. And in the afterlife, he continues painting it, which many people have said is the most autobiographical thing he ever wrote.
Wow.
And it will call back to this, to stuff about subcreation and stuff, because there's a lot of connective tissue between those two things.
He's giving you a little glimpse into like what is sort of like a blessing, and then at the same, like creativity as a blessing and then as a curse, because once you open that Pandora's box, it's like almost impossible to stop, because once you get away from this plane, you can just go forever and ever and ever and ever and never stop. Even into the afterlife, you're still almost tortured by it, right? Yeah. I don't know.
That's certainly one... Leaf by Niggle certainly takes on that question. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's just put that on the shelf for now, and we'll get back to it, because cool name, cool idea.
Yeah. The last bit of On Fairy Stories is three really important things that he gets into, and that's what's the point of fairy stories? And he says there's three main points.
Sure.
Recovery, escape, and consolation.
Oh my God, that sounds like my weekend. Am I right? Woo. Let's hear more about those. Geez, that's what I can get behind.
By recovery, he meant the idea that you could, through fairy stories, you could take something that had become stale and you could refresh it, or you could get a clear view at something by reinterpreting it through fantasy. You could get a fresh look at it.
That's cool. Like taking it out of this world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Escape is escapism, basically.
Oh, that's
getting
my
out
favorite.
Of the mundane world.
Right.
You could see, get into a place, you can have a story where people can fly or there's dragons or whatever. Tolkien really loved dragons.
Oh, he fucking loved it. Who doesn't? Can we blame him?
No, but
him?
I mean, Tolkien really loved dragons.
He really loved dragons, guys.
No, he put dragons into stuff. Like, we'll have, I really want to do an episode about dragons.
And oh my God. Much, thank you. Like, I've been waiting for that. All of 32 minutes I've been waiting for this.
No, one of the things I really appreciate about Tolkien is that his enthusiasm for the source material.
Sure.
And one of those things was dragons. He just, you know, in a lot of places, his world building is really robust and is really sort of ground up. And, you know, he's inventing the languages and following where that comes from and saying things like, I don't know where the blue wizards are. I haven't found that out yet. And then sometimes he's just like, I just, you know, of course I put dragons in, man. Have you read the Call of Vale? It's got a sweet dragon. Of course I put a dragon in.
Like, hell yeah. Mads Gulli dragons and treasures and shit, man.
Yeah. I really like that about Tolkien. That
he's keeping it real.
Well, there's an enthusiasm in his work that I don't think people always appreciate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that is, dragons are like the fucking center of like every kid's imagination, right? That's like when you think of fantasy as like a fucking speculative fiction form, you think of fucking dragons, right?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So, all right. Back to.
Sorry, we just did a little escape dragon. Of our own. It was a dragon aside, you guys.
Small dragon escape.
That was called Dragon Corner. Oh, wait, Dragon's Den. Oh, wait, that might be a TM'd TV show. Never mind. It's called Dragon's Corner. So sorry, that was escapism. And now we're on to the last one.
Yeah, consolation. Consolation is basically the happy ending.
Oh, bless. It's the best.
Yeah. And this is a place where he coined his own word.
My favorite. Wait, stop. This is my favorite word ever. Go for it. Tell me.
It's eucatastrophe.
Yeah, it is. It's me catastrophe. No, it's amazing. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
It's a really cool concept. So yes, in talking about consolation, he's talking about the idea that in fairy stories, you get to have the happy ending, the righting of wrongs and the return from death. And he described this special kind of happy ending that fairy stories can give you as the eucatastrophe, the good catastrophe.
Yeah.
The sudden unexpected turn.
Right.
And he, because he's Catholic, he refers to the birth of Christ as a eucatastrophe.
Right, because it was like, oh, wait, the birth of Christ? I don't know anything about that.
Aren't
what
you
about
Catholic?
The death of Christ? Yes, I'm Catholic, Jesus. I'm a fall-away Catholic.
Yes, died. I'm Catholic, Jesus.
He was born. He was born and did a thing, and then a few years later, he died and was risen, right? And that is the eucatastrophe that I read about.
Well, he actually does mention that the resurrection counts as another eucatastrophe.
Can I say something? Yeah. It was, so I read a quote online, and I don't honestly, because I'm a bad researcher and I don't remember sources, but it said that a eucatastrophe is, it's from a place where joy and sorrow becomes one. And I thought that was like so fucking beautiful, right? Yeah. It's a time where like you're so happy, but you're still crying like a baby.
Yeah. In order for a eucatastrophe to work, you have to, it's a joy that has to come out of a sorrow.
Yeah.
Because it's a sudden turn out of, that reverses a downward turn. It doesn't work unless there's sorrow. And you can see them, even though you don't necessarily, it's not as though they're all over the place in Lord of the Rings.
No, but there are some very poignant ones.
Is all throughout Lord of the Rings. The idea of that mix of sorrow and joy. One of my favorites.
Oh, shit. I was just going to ask you what your favorite fucking you catastrophe is. Okay, good. Oh, thank God. All right. Tell me.
Mine would probably be Gandalf showing up at Helm's Deep.
Fucking Helm's Deep. He and Aramir riding over the mountain. You're absolutely right. Because it's fucking like the winged hussars coming down.
Yeah. They.
It's beautiful.
That's a great moment to me because everybody in Helm's Deep is basically either already dead or has accepted that they're going to die.
Yeah. Like Theoden's put on his armor. He's like, everything's good, bad, great. Let's just fucking do it.
Yeah. Theoden and Aragorn are like, let's ride out and die. Let's do it.
They did an overhand high five and they're like, going to do it. Wait. Yeah. It's fucking amazing. And then it's like, we're going to fucking cry about this. And then all of a sudden, fucking dawn happens.
Yeah. Dawn breaks and then Gandalf shows up and literally turns that moment of sorrow into one of joy and saves that moment. I think that's a really good one. But there's a few in the series.
Well, hold on. Ask me what my favorite one is.
Well, what's your favorite?
Okay. Shoot. Okay. So in Return of the King, everything's going really shitty in the Battle of Planor, right? Everything's going really bad. And Aragorn's like, well, fuck. And he's standing under his banner and he's like, shit, this is not going good. And then all of a sudden we're punted up to Gandalf and he's standing on a hill and he's like, yeah, man, well, fuck. And there's like a fucking Nazgul flying around and everything is bad. And then all of a sudden the fucking eagles show up. You know what I'm saying? They fucking show up and Gandalf's like, dudes, men of the West, don't worry, guys. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's fine. And there's a fucking earthquake and the black gates fall down. And Gandalf's like, oh my God, Frodo fucking did it. Everything's going to be. And there's like this beautiful moment. And you're like, oh my, you're like crying in the movie theater and everything is great. In the book, right? That's a great moment right there because it's like everything is bad. Our two main heroes are like, oh shit, we're going to fucking die right now. And then we're pulled back from the brink. He's like edging us on the brink and then pulls us back and it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's a good one. Return of the King's got a couple of them.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the kind of lost thing. So it's kind of its whole MO, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you for indulging me. I was like, I need to tell you my favorite. Okay, keep going.
Well, that's kind of the end of the end of the lecture once he gets down to you catastrophe.
All right. He's like, this is why it's fucking important. Fairy stories give you this feeling of joy when everything else is going really shitty in your life. Fairy tales will pull you out. Yeah, that's his whole point, is that fairy tales are supposed to bring you joy at a very visceral level, right? It's not like Lovecraft, who's like riding the fucking temple going, I'm in a submarine and I'm writing this because I'm gonna die and everything's terrible. Tolkien is writing from a place of like, all right, things might seem kind of crappy right now, but don't worry. Stay with me, bros. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what On Fairy Stories is about. It's an important piece to me because I think it's a personal piece to Tolkien. And I think it's a really fun piece to read because I don't think the people who sat down to listen to it had any idea what they were hearing.
Sure.
And I don't think, even after they heard it, I don't think they probably appreciated what they had just heard.
No, it was too early in his career, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's only now, after all of his stuff had been published, that people were able to appreciate how much of his thought process lived in that essay. And that's why I think it was... I wanted to talk about this one first, because if you're going to sit down and begin a study of Tolkien, I think it's a useful place to start to look at why he thinks about fantasy the way he does. It's a meaningful pursuit. It has value and there's a reason to do it. And I like that. I think that's interesting that he felt compelled to he felt compelled to build that argument.
Yeah.
And I think I think he did so with fairly eloquently.
Absolutely. Especially when he was being kind of a dick to like the guy whose hall he was in.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he was a dick about it, but he certainly disagreed with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that he was just trying to provide a different go at it. I think that a lot of the scholars of the time who said they were like folklorists and people who went around collecting these things as a job, he was basically saying like, yeah, that's fine. But like, guess what? There's a whole nother way of looking at this. And that is going to set you free because it allows you to really enjoy it. And it allows you to say that it's important as like high fiction, right? Or whatever it is that we're all doing here.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree.
I have a question for you. What sure. is your favorite fairy tale? And you can't say Lord of the Rings. You can't say a Tolkien thing. You have to say a non-Tolkien fairy tale.
Okay. So
and don't ask me because I can't think of any. Lord of the
Rings isn't a fairy tale.
I know it's not a fucking fairy
tale.
But
The Hobbit is.
Whoa. Okay. Shots fired. What? Tell us more. What are you talking about?
The Hobbit was Tolkien doing fairy tale fan fiction.
Well, there's hobbits and barrels. There's all kinds of shit happening.
No, I'm serious. If you
barrels, I don't
so
know.
So I'm 100% stealing this thesis from maybe the most entertaining academic piece of Tolkien academia I've ever read. It's called The History of the Hobbit, and it's by Ratliff. I'm trying to remember his first name. John Ratliff. And he makes it's a two volume set and it's super fun to read. And he makes an extremely, I mean, it's borderline airtight, argument in this work that Tolkien's, what he was doing when he wrote The Hobbit was he was mashing up all these fairy story tropes that he was super familiar with,
ooh,
including his own Middle Earth stuff.
Yes.
Because when he was writing The Hobbit, he had never intended it to be published. He was just making up a story for his kids. He took traditional little like pixie fairies. He took all these things, traditional English like fairy hunt tropes, like all these different types of things. And he mashed them all together and he built this story. And then the fucking thing got published.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And he's like, God damn. And there's all kinds of, all throughout the book, there is evidence that the Hobbit doesn't fit into the legendarium neatly at all. The first edition in particular is a mess.
Oh no.
For example, the elven king that is such a pain to the dwarves is a carbon copy of Thingol, who is an elven king that also lives underground, has beef with dwarves.
And, cool.
You know, lived, but happened to live, you know, in the second age and is long dead by the time that Bilbo Baggins lived.
That's true.
There's a bunch of little references throughout The Hobbit to pieces of his legendarium, besides the fact that there's hobbits involved.
No, that's true. And there's some, and there's very important foreshadowing in The Hobbit as well, because there's a whole fucking section where like the Lord of the fucking Eagles comes and chats with them. Right. And it's like that. Okay. Let's just talk about Stephanie's favorite, you know, moment. Where the eagles come back, it was like they were like, oh, the eagles are kind of a pain in the ass, aren't they? But the goblins don't like them. So that's a beautiful foreshadow. I mean, he didn't even know he was foreshadowing yet. But what a great, now that we can look back on the whole thing, what a great moment.
Yeah. No, it's all this stuff that he liked from fairy stories.
Sure.
There's a white stag that shows up in one part. And you know why that's there? Because that's a traditional element in a lot of fairy stories, is a white stag.
Absolutely.
That you follow and get lost.
Anybody who's been to England has at least eaten at four white stag or like white heart pubs, right? Exactly. That's where it comes from.
So the argument that is made, that Ratliff makes, and I think very convincingly does so, is that Tolkien was taking all these tropes and mashing them together, and that's what the Hobbit, that's where the Hobbit came from.
Oh,
and that's my favorite fairy tale.
Is the Hobbit. I love that. That's sort of like annoying because, of course, it's going to be something from Tolkien. But it's like, oh shit, he like totally told us why. So okay, fine, all right.
I have sources. So.
He's got sources in different area codes, people. That's beautiful. Cool.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it. If you're a fan of The Hobbit, I can't think of a better piece to recommend if you're interested in how The Hobbit got written and what went into it. It's incredibly readable. It's super entertaining, and it's very easy to get.
You link to it in the show notes so that we can see it?
Yeah.
Oh, bless.
Yeah, it's great.
Are you actually just running one long ad for this program? Because that's what it sounds like. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Just kidding. No, I mean, that's the thing. That's where these people go to share these wonderful ideas. And what a great fucking source we have now from them. So thank you.
Yeah. No, it's a really great book. I'm a big fan.
Yay. So from here, now that we've established a grounding, a place where we can land with this, what do you see as kind of our next destination? Where are we going with this podcast, and where is Tolkien going from here in this moment?
As far as Tolkien, he's writing Lord of the Rings at the moment.
Ooh, haven't heard of it. No, I'm just
My thinking was we would do something in Lord of the Rings. I don't know yet, though. Maybe in the appendices, might go a little weirder. I haven't decided yet.
Ooh.
I do know that future episodes, we're going to hit up the Silmarillion.
Okay.
We're going to get into one of my absolute favorite essays that Tolkien wrote, something called The Shibboleth of Feanor.
Ooh. Which That's a is, bunch of words I don't know.
That is an essay he wrote that includes Feanor, who is the most brilliant and biggest dick elf that ever lived.
How can you tell them apart, dude?
No, I mean, he really is like the biggest punk ass elf that ever existed on the face of Middle Earth.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
This is a guy that literally created an entire different dialect of his language to be a prick. Like,
oh my God. You know what? I've done that too, but I've had a few wines.
The essay is entirely about. The Shibboleth of Feanor is an essay about how he made the pronunciation of TH versus S. He made it a political thing and created a dialect shift in ancient Quenya.
Well, that's annoying. We didn't even have the first dialogue down. Don't shift it. Jeez, he was a dick.
Oh, you have no idea. I'm really looking forward to that piece.
That's going to be a whole fucking episode of just that guy being a dick.
We could do like two episodes or three on Feanor.
Holy shit, it's a trilogy.
I forget that you haven't read about what a tool bag Feanor is. He's such a tool bag.
I'm just waiting for you to tell I'm waiting you for you no to idea. Tell me.
You have no idea what a tool bag this guy is.
Jesus, he sounds like a past boyfriend of mine. Let's dive in. I mean, all right. Well, we'll hold off for another episode, but this is very exciting. I mean, that's the thing. Tolkien wrote really heroic characters, and he wrote fucking dicks.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'll be kind of be our gateway into a brief section, maybe not so brief section on the linguistic nonsense.
Oh boy.
Because he's got a bit of that. So we'll do a little bit on, we'll have an episode or two about the language shenanigans.
Yeah, please.
At some point, I want to do an episode on Elvish as she is spoke, which is a super, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just fell asleep for a minute. I'm sorry. No, I'm back.
Elvish as she is spoke is great.
Elvish, is that an essay?
Yeah.
As she spoke, it's a
female. Elvish as she spoke is a diss track in the form of an essay by a guy named Carl Hostetter towards another part of the Tolkien language fandom. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's him kicking dirt on people who make Neo-Quenya because he doesn't think.
Oh my God.
I'm dead serious. He didn't think that it was a legitimate way to study Tolkien languages.
If I want to create a fucking Quenya word for cell phone, I'm going to do it. Okay. I don't need you guys' scorn. I feel like you guys are haters. I'm going to make a word for okr in Quenya and you can suck it.
I'm just saying it's super good. it's a super interesting essay. Carl Hostetter is another guy that showed up in a Mythgard class and he talked about this essay. He's a really interesting speaker and I was really happy that we got to hear him talk. But this essay is hilarious and great and I'm really excited to talk about it because the whole subject of Tolkien languages is really interesting to me and how they've fragmented into the sort of preservationist camp and then the Neo-Quenya, the living language camp. So that's a whole episode that I want to get into and talk about.
People who want to use it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of interesting stuff I want to talk about in the future.
There is so many yucks coming for you guys. You don't even know. Like, holy shit. Pour a glass of wine. Get ready for some vocal fry and for me being very confused for most of this podcast. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's only going to get weirder from here.
Oh, shit. Guys, I'm so excited. Thank you, Jude. Thanks for inviting me to be part of this podcast. I feel wildly unprepared.
But that's all right. I do too.
Oh, shit. Then everybody, guess what? We're in real trouble.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for this evening. Thank you for putting up with us.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We super appreciate it. And please come back again. You know, it'll get better. It's fine. Just hang on with us. Let's go on this ride together.
The road may go ever on and on, but this episode is over. Join us next episode when we talk about Appendix A of The Lord of the Rings. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes, as it helps increase our visibility and bring this podcast to more people. You can find this show on Twitter at @Athrabeth_cast. I can be found on Twitter at @AramiticJude, and Steph can be found at @TheNorthFork. Title music is Lord of the Devil Rings by Q Fox. Thanks for listening.